Are we recording? Yes, we are. Fantastic. Let's go.
Hi, everyone. I'm Louisa. I'm an autistic academic at the University of Reading, and I'm your podcast host for season 3 of Psychological. As you might already know, if you've listened to the previous 2 seasons with Sue, Psychological is a podcast that started during lockdown, and it aims to make an evidence-based contribution to conversations about child and adolescent well-being, development and learning, and neurodiversity. Today's Psychological is with Alex Lloyd, who is a research fellow at University College London, and he's on the phone with me today to talk about one of his recent research papers that came out of his PhD work, Are Adolescents More Optimal Decision Makers in Novel Environments? Examining the Benefits of Heightened Exploration in a Patch Foraging Paradigm. And the paper is also co-authored with some of my wonderful PhD supervisors, so that's exciting. So, hello Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, thanks, how are you?
I'm good, yeah. Excited for the podcast and excited to hear about what you found. So, because I heard a little bit about when you were doing your research, but I kind of haven't heard about what you found or anything. So I'm excited to hear. So that'll be fun.
Well, hopefully it's a bit more in a better state now than it was when I was talking to you during the PhD.
Yeah. Well, you've recently finished your PhD, haven't you? So
have, yeah. All done now.
And you had your Viva and it went well.
Well, I passed, so you could have gone too bad.
So now it's Dr. Alex Lloyd, which is very exciting.
Very fun.
Doctor. So first of all, Alex, we'll start off with what you found. Would you be able to tell me what you discovered in this piece of research?
Yeah, so in this bit of research, we compared adolescents and adults' exploration behaviours. And basically what we did is we tested them on this patch foraging paradigm, which kind of goes back to how we used to search for resources as hunter-gatherers. And what we found was that adolescents explore more than adults, which is something that we kind of had a sense about in the literature anyway. But in this case, we kind of demonstrated that actually exploration was beneficial for adolescents because they were better than adults at collecting rewards on this task. And so I think what this kind of shows is that actually, although we often talk about adolescents as a negative point in the lifespan, you know, lots of risk-taking, lots of risky behaviours, actually some of the behaviours that are associated with that risk-taking aspect of adolescence can lead to more optimal outcomes in the context of this patch foraging task.
Awesome. That sounds really interesting. So what motivated you to actually look at kind of exploration in the context that you did?
So I think going back to sort of adolescence as how we talk about adolescence, I think the reason that I was interested in this was because adolescence isn't just a negative point in the lifespan. You know, we've all done silly things when we're teenagers that we look back on and say, now that I'm an adult, I probably wouldn't have done that. But we've all been an adolescent. We've all survived that period in our lives. And actually, we've learned a lot from it. So in the literature, there's these two kind of models of what adolescent decision-making is all about. One of them is about how adolescence is predominantly characterized by risk-taking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this kind of focuses on a lot of the negative sides of adolescence. So, you know, risk-taking in terms of sort of dangerous driving, substance misuse, and risky sexual behaviors. Mm-hmm. But actually, there's another model that says that the exploration and the kind of novelty-seeking that we see in adolescents is actually for adolescents to gain that important experiential knowledge. Mm-hmm. And for them to be able to essentially learn when they do good things happen. And when they do bad things happen. Because again, you know, as adults, we need a bit of experience to know, you know, maybe I shouldn't run across the road when the light is red. And, you know, making some of those earlier mistakes as adolescents kind of gives us that experiential knowledge, which helps us to become independent adults. So it kind of puts adolescence as like a functional point in the lifespan where we really gain some important skills.
Awesome. And I guess a lot of like, brain development happens over adolescence as well. So that seems to be like in line with when they're learning about how the world works, their brain is learning about how the world works as well. So that
absolutely. That yeah. Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of sort of, you know, a lot of the kind of developments that happen during adolescence, you know, a lot of sort of the dopamine sort of, which is that neurotransmitter that sort of, you know, controls for a lot of like reward seeking behaviors, you know, that's very important in sort of motivating novelty seeking behaviors. Mm-hmm. And so we think because that's really active in adolescence, that's actually contributing to pushing them out almost to make them engage with these novelty-seeking behaviours. And actually, that's the reason for that kind of development of that dopaminergic reward system is actually to kind of, you know, facilitate this gaining of that experiential knowledge.
Cool. Awesome. It's really exciting. So how did you do the study that you did then?
So we did this in a lab-based sort of setting. So we did it on computers in person. So this was pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. And what we did is we got teenagers and adults to basically sit at a computer and they completed a patch foraging task. So for those of you that aren't familiar with patch foraging, it's something that we see quite often in a lot of realms within the animal kingdom and also in human behavior. But one example that I tend to use is bees foraging for honey or for pollen even.
Yep.
So, you know, as the bee, not quite for honey, that's later. But as bees, you know, are going to different flowers, they have the choice of staying with a particular flower where they're collecting pollen. And, you know, the longer they stay with a particular flower, there's going to be less and less pollen for them to collect. Mm-hmm. So at some point, it's going to make sense for them to go onto a new flower where there's going to be a fresh bunch of pollen for them to collect. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a time cost associated with that, because, you know, the longer they stay with that particular flower, the longer they're going to be, more energy they're going to be expending for like a less return of pollen. So there's like a really fine trade-off between, you know, how much emphasis you put on your current resource and how much emphasis you put on your on traveling to a new one. But then, you know, when you're traveling, not gaining pollen. So there's also a fine balance between not exploring too much, because, you know, you're basically not collecting enough resources from the flower that you're currently at if you're in this particular bee.
I guess there's a change as well between flowers as well. There might be more resources in one flower than another, so they also need to balance that as well as the time cost thing.
Exactly. Yeah. It's really important. So, and that was actually part of our study. So we didn't manipulate the sort of richness of rewards on particular flowers in our example. So we used an apple picking paradigm. So, you know, you arrive at a tree, you pick some apples from it, and each time you stay with that tree, or the longer you stay with it, the fewer apples you can collect. Or you can go to a new tree and there's a fresh bunch of apples.
Okay.
So what we did is that we gave participants four environments, or as we called them, or more like orchards. Mm-hmm. And different orchards had different levels of environmental richness. So in richer quality orchards, there were more apples to collect, because, you know, there were certain things that we manipulated in terms of sort of, you know, how long it took to travel to different trees, mm-hmm. Which can sort of, you know, affect how many rewards there are able to collect. And we manipulated that as a way of testing, you know, are adolescents and adults actually going to adjust their behavior between different orchards and between different conditions? Or are they just going to sort of, you know, in adolescence, for example, just use a really, really exploratory strategy regardless of what environment they're in?
Mm.
So we tested them on these four different orchards, and then we looked at the difference between adolescents themselves and adults. So we did a within a mixed design where there was a within subject aspect, which was different orchards, and then the between subjects factor, which was whether or not participants were adolescents or adults.
So do they have to kind of learn about what each environment is like, or do you give them any information about each environment on the screen so they kind of actually learn about it themselves, or do you kind of tell them anything?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So they're told that there are some orchards that are better than others. Mm. And so in the richer quality orchards, it's better to explore more because, you know, there's more rewards available to collect within the kind of other trees that you're going to go and see. So we tell them that there are some orchards that are better than others to in terms of the number of apples they can collect. Mm-hmm. But we don't tell them specifically how that's manipulated. So they don't exactly know that, for example, in some orchards, there's going to be a longer travel time than others. So there is an element of learning in there. So that was one thing that we were really keen to see as well, because, you know, if we're talking about, you know, are adolescents more exploratory because they're learning about their environment? Well, we don't want to just give them all the information in the first place, because we actually want to see how they learn along the way.
Okay. Oh, that's really cool. Did you model how they learn then? Was that a model that you applied to it for learning, or?
So we've done modeling in a separate study, but not in this particular one. So what we actually did with this one though, which was, I think is personally quite interesting, but admittedly I'm a bit biased. So we simulated what an optimal forager would look like. And what we mean by an optimal forager is that we basically ran simulations of if the forager uses, you know, explores at this number of apples, how many rewards would they collect throughout the time they spend in that environment. Mm-hmm. And we did that for every number of apples that participants could collect. Mm-hmm. And we simulated this for sort of, you know, 100,000 different foragers in each environment. And we used that as a test to say, you know, depending on what number of apples they should leave at based on these simulations, we use that to actually compare participants' actual behavior to.
Cool.
Which allowed us to sort of say, you know, is this optimal what they're doing? You know, how close are these participants to the optimal leaving threshold? So that kind of gave us a model in some sense of to be able to compare participants' behavior to.
That's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. So then when you compared that, you found that, was it that adolescents were more optimal than were the adults? Couldn't remember the word then for adults.
the old people. Yeah. But no, you're exactly right. So that was, I think, one thing that we were quite keen to emphasize in this paper is that, you know, because we can say what the behavioral optimum is, you know, what participants should be doing. Actually, you know, when we found that adolescents were closer to this optimum, it kind of gives that kind of argument that actually, you know, participants or adolescents' behavior in particular, because they're exploring more, it's not necessarily a negative thing like some people have characterized in the past. Mm. Actually, adolescents' exploration can be beneficial. And in this, in the context of patch foraging, it makes them more optimal foragers compared to adults. So, you know, I think that's kind of, you know, where this study contributes towards the broader discussion about adolescence, is that it's not just a period of, you know, teenagers doing silly things. It's actually, there are real kind of, you know, benefits to these heightened exploratory tendencies in adolescence.
Yeah, that's a really cool finding and a really interesting study, and a nice way that you've done it as well. So nice way to explore that. Also, what were the age group of the like adolescents and adults that you used? So what kind of?
So adolescents, so this is admittedly something that I think, you know, it is a valid sort of thing to critique about the study. So our adolescents were 16 to 17 year olds. And there are sort of various reasons for this, in that, you know, this tends to be where adolescents are exploring it in a slightly more complex way, in a slightly more considered way. And it's also around that sort of time where teenagers get a bit more independence generally. Okay. So we wanted to sort of test that developmental period where adolescents are going to have the opportunities to explore, because mm-hmm. they're slightly more independent from their parents at this age. Mm-hmm. But our adults were anyone age 21 and above. And the reason for that was that at 21, although adolescence does extend up to 24 in some people's views, mm. 21 is typically where these kind of more mature cognitive control capacities tend to mature. Mm-hmm. But our adults range from 21 to 50. So there was a much broader range of adults in our sample compared to the adolescents. So, you know, it's still, you know, adults versus adolescents, but the range of ages in our adult sample is quite a lot wider than our adolescent sample.
Yeah. And I guess there probably wouldn't have been enough people across the age spread to see if it differed kind of throughout that sample either, because then you're like breaking your sample down and decreasing your power. But
yeah, we did test if within the adult sample, whether or not there were changes in the rates of exploration behavior, and whether or not, you know, younger adults were more optimal than older adults, because there is some literature to suggest that actually older adults, but those that are closer towards 70, 75, mm. explore more than younger adults. That's something that's been found in the past, but we didn't find such differences. But I think part of the reason for that is that, you know, our older adult sample, the eldest, you know, on our adults was mm. 50, whereas the oldest adult in this previous study that found that difference or 75. So, yeah. You know, I think there's an argument that, you know, generally across the lifespan, exploration behaviors kind of decline from adolescence right until sort of, you know, 70s, 80s, because there is kind of, you can put it down to evolutionary reasons that, you know, younger organisms should be exploring more because they can learn and they've got the kind of vigor and the energy to do so. Whereas when you're an older organism, you're physically less able to explore more. Mm-hmm. So you should rely on kind of, you know, previous experience and kind of be a bit more efficient in some ways to sort of, like going back to the flower example, finding the richest flowers, you know, that you should exploit rather than sort of going for the sort of, you know, just general overall searching strategy.
So perhaps they're more optimal through experience, whereas teenagers are more optimal through how they're exploring more, perhaps.
Yeah. I mean, I think in our particular task, obviously participants don't have any experience of these particular environments, right? So, you know, on a level playing field where no one knows, has any previous mm-hmm. experience about the environment, mm-hmm. adolescence exploration made them more optimal foragers. But in like a kind of, you know, more ecologically valid setting, you know, if you're a hunter-gatherer, for example, you're going to have lived in the same kind of environment for most of your actual life. Yeah. So that's when that kind of experience would pay off and allow you to be more optimal in some senses, because actually, you know, you've learned, for example, if I go and forage from this particular bush, these are really nice, you know, juicy berries that are going to give me lots of energy. Whereas, you know, picking up a few twigs and trying to nibble on those isn't going to give me so much energy.
Whereas, if you're a guinea pig, they like nibbling on twigs.
So. Well, exactly. You know, guinea pig foraging is a thing though. You know, this is what's cool about foraging, is that almost every single species does it. Mm. So, you know, you've got really nice, like, translational kinds of research that's looked at animals and humans as well. Mm. And, you know, obviously we're a bit more complex in our foraging, but not that much more complex compared to, you know, other organisms.
Yeah. Awesome. So do you have plans to kind of do a little bit more around foraging, or are you doing different things now? What are your plans?
Yeah, so we followed up on some of these findings in my PhD, and so we're currently writing up those findings to sort of try and build on this. And one of the things that two things we're really, really interested in, actually. So one is how social influence affects these foraging strategies, because again, another big thing about adolescence is that teenagers are really sensitive towards the views of their peers. Mm-hmm. You know, we can all think back to being a teenager and how much we wanted to be liked by our friends and do it anything we could to sort of, you know, make sure that we weren't ostracized from our friendship group. And so one thing we're looking at is whether or not the views of peers can actually change these foraging strategies and make adolescents less optimal. So, you know, we've seen in this study that adolescents are more optimal foragers, but actually can we influence them to be less optimal based on the views and opinions of their peers? And so, you know, this would sort of highlight kind of the evidence about, while it's fantastic that teenagers are more optimal foragers, you know, completely independent, actually, when you then introduce their friends, can they sort of detract from some of those optimal strategies, and can they actually sort of, you know, influence them in negative ways? And that has kind of all sorts of implications for thinking about, you know, making sure that teenagers have positive role models and positive friends that kind of, you know, steer them towards better options and better choices.
Awesome. Yeah, so kind of using your paradigm, I guess, to build like more of like a full picture of how adolescents learn about environments and how their relationships interact. That's so cool.
I think it's really important to just, you know, recognize that adolescents are, it's a really cool time of the life, you know, and there are lots of really cool things about it, but it's so busy. There's so much that's going on for teenagers. You know, there's not just, you know, their own kind of neurobiological development. There's, you know, friendship groups, there's schools, there's loads of change that happens. And so trying to contextualize some of adolescents' behavior within these kind of broader changes, I think, is quite important as well.
Yeah, I mean, you gave a TED talk as well a while ago, didn't you, which is kind of broadly based around adolescence and youth justice, is it, that your TED talk is about?
Yeah. So a lot of that's about kind of how experiences can sort of, you know, predispose some people to be more likely to engage in what we would class as criminal behavior, but actually are the product of certain developments that happen after particular experiences, in particular adverse childhood experiences, and how that kind of impacts later behavior. But, you know, how the kind of environment shapes teenagers' behavior and understanding things that they do, such as criminal acts, or, you know, just novelty seeking behaviors, within the broader context of adolescent environment.
Awesome. Yeah, I will link that in the podcast description as well if anyone wants to listen to Alex's TED talk, because it is a very good listen. It's really interesting.
Thank you.
I'll add that, that's okay. So we'll finish with the paper chat now, but the next question that I have to ask you is whether you have any advice for anyone who is at an earlier stage of their career than you are, so like PhD or undergraduate students maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I think the bit of advice that I probably would give to, and I think this is quite general advice across the board, but I think it would be don't be afraid to reach out to researchers that you admire or want to work with or know more about their work. Because I think it's very easy to think that, you know, you can't sort of be the proactive element as an early career researcher or, you know, pre-PhD in particular, about working with particular supervisors. And, you know, I think that one of the kind of less publicized routes towards doing a PhD is actually reaching out to more senior academics that you really want to work with and saying, you know, I like your work. Do you have a PhD position available? That's how I did it. And it worked out brilliantly for me. So I would encourage anyone that's looking to do a PhD or even a postdoc to reach out to people that, you know, are doing work in a similar field that they really admire, and just really show your interest and ask if there's any positions available, because, you know, it can lead to really fantastic opportunities.
Yeah, sometimes people have sort of availability for like a little bit of time spent as a research assistant as well, which is a nice way to get like a bit of experience in different labs and things. So it's, even if it's not just for a big thing like a PhD or a postdoc, you might be able to get some experience, especially if you're an undergrad, reaching out at that stage to someone whose research you like, especially if they're in your department, you could get research assistant placements doing things like that. So yeah, really good advice. Thank you, Alex. Really good. And also thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a really nice chat. And for anyone listening as well, thank you also to you for joining us. You can find out more about Alex and his work by following the links in the podcast description on Buzzsprout or in your podcast app. And join us again at the same time next week for another episode of Psychological. Bye.